5G and Apple One. Let's talk about those two things for a moment, because you have some follow-up in the notes about those two topics. So what have you got for us, Mayo?
Yeah, so just kind of following on from, I guess, our 5G conversation that spanned the event week and last week. The timelines are just so compressed at the moment. But I got a few listeners come in, and they were like screenshotting that they got like 1200 megabits in, you know, this area of London or whatever, and they were like, look at this is great, and this is great, and I'm like, yeah, it is great. And then one of them kind of said, oh, I downloaded like the Despicable Me movie from the TV app in like 1 minute 20 seconds. I'm like, and it's at that point, that's where like the criticism comes in, right? Because did you download the Despicable Movie right there and then because you actually wanted to watch it and you hadn't thought to do it before? Or did you do it just because you noticed that you had 1200 megabytes of download speed and you're like, what shall I use this speed for? I better go, I guess.
It doesn't matter. We're in the testing phase right now. That's what it's all about.
I know, but the point, I think I know. They were tweeting at me trying to like, this is what you can use it for. But realistically, that's not like, my complaints with 5G are not just that it isn't like, the coverage is bad. Like, even if 5G was universally deployed, I still think that the ability for the iPhone 12 to do 5G, it would be a muted feature this year, because what you're using the extra bandwidth for, whether you're on the 5G normal, which is like, you know, twice the speed of the old LTE, sometimes even equal speed, but generally like about double the speed, right? So like 80 to 120 megabits, or you're on ultra wideband, which is like 1200 to 2000, like, you're still not going to do anything different. And I think it is incredibly rare that you get into situations where you're like, wow, now I've got 1,000 gigabit, or, you know, I've got a gigabit download speed. Now I can download this movie that I really want to watch right this second, and I couldn't wait the 10 minutes to download it over LTE, and I couldn't download it on Wi-Fi yesterday.
Have you never been in a situation when you want to, like, download a lot of stuff for on the go at the last minute? Like, you're about to, you know, this is a realistic scenario. You're about to be on a plane. You realize, oh, no, I thought this was synced or downloaded, and it's not. And here goes, you know, this hours-long flight. How fast can I download, you know, these podcast episodes or these offline YouTube videos or these, you know, full-length movies? It's a real thing. Like, you know, right now the thing is, where do you use, like, where is it available? You know, and you want it to be in those places where it's the most necessary. But those are, like, real case scenarios. And it's we're in the testing, like, scientific phase of, like, what is possible? What's out there? What can we expect? Is the, you know, a speed test is one thing, but like actually, you know, doing an act that uses the data speed is another. And if you were going to be like, it was like really fast on the speed test, but then it still took ages for like the servers to present the video, then to be like, oh, well, that's too bad. But I think it's reasonable.
Like, yeah, I'm not saying it's not worthless, obviously, right? It's not completely pointless, but it's not like, to me, a reason that I would be like rushing to upgrade the phone this year, right? It's just on there, and it's like, okay, yeah, maybe.
But long view, it's good to have it there this year, because when you use $1,000 phones, or even like the mini is $700?
Yeah.
So $700 phones for more than, you know, a year, it's better to have it baked in now and take advantage of it when it's more available than not. Anyway.
I appreciate everyone, like, you know, tweeting in about it and stuff. So I got this here. I think it's really cool. Like, come on, a gigabit internet, regardless of whether you're going to use it or not, it's cool to be able to get it on a phone.
Yeah. Was there an ad in the UK that had, like, fine print from the 5G? Yeah. Okay, tell me about that, because I briefly recall that. But
yeah, so I tweeted, there's this ad that's running. I think it's on the EE carrier, and it's just, it's the iPhone 12... bounce ad, so you know that they're like standard ad that they've shown in every country, but in the UK it's associated with the EE brand. But on the YouTube version, there's no fine print, right? It just has the iPhone 12 ad, right? But on the TV version, obviously it's had to go through British like advertising standards, and so it has a caption which is like 5G only available in very limited areas or something. I can't remember the exact word.
Yeah, it's pretty harsh though.
Limited availability. Yeah, it's like, and it's just kind of presaging the fact that, you know, you can buy this phone, it can say 5G left, right, and center, but you're unlikely to be able to use it where you are, especially in Britain, I think. Like, if you're outside of London, you're really struggling at the moment for 5G.
Can you see the picture I just sent you over iMessage?
Mm-hmm.
iPhone 12 and iPhone 12 Pro. These are ads instead of a Walmart in an area with no 5G. At least, well, I don't think there's 5G right here. And, you know, I take a picture because it has, like, this hilarious, like, read/write like printed over the artwork of the iPhones on both of them, and they're like publicly displayed. I don't know what that's about, but
you have to read slash write it.
It's like that wasn't final. But the it's Apple iPhone 12 and Apple iPhone 12 Pro, and then it's Hello 5G for both of those. And this is certainly in an area without 5G. So I do take a bit of your point in that, you know, pushing this as the big feature this year is...
Okay, here's my new call out to listeners, right?
Sure.
Tweet me when you use 5G when you couldn't have done it on LTE.
Well, that's not what 5G is. It's not like yes or no flipping a switch. It's like it's like quality of life improvement.
Yeah, but okay, when you're in a situation where you couldn't have waited the extra 5 minutes to download it on LTE, but you had to download it right now.
I mean, you could make this argument about...
an excuse to download it right this second.
You could make this argument about email on your phone. Like, tweet me when you really had to have email on your phone and you couldn't just wait to get back to your office and check your email.
No, it's miles apart from that. It's miles apart. Like, you literally couldn't do email on the phone before the iPhone. Like,
yeah, but you could just wait and check. You could just wait and check it, you know, at home or at your office.
Yeah, but you couldn't render.
You could find a hotspot. Like,
yeah, but there's like downloading Despicable Me because you can, and there's like. Oh, I had to.
But what if they're downloading
the
like?
If you're talking about you're just rushing on the plane, you want to download a movie. Well, for a start, if you're in the airport, you won't get any signal. And then second,
you might get ultra wideband. You might get one of those like super.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what it's like, designed for.
If you're on ultra wideband though, your data cap will get used up in seconds. Like I don't know what the plans are like in America, but all the British plans, they still cap out at like 50 gigs a month or whatever. Like you can't download that much super quickly before you've run out of, you know, you've run out of your plan.
That'll get worked out. It's okay.
Like if they had unlimited plans, it'd be fantastic. If they have like 5G iPads, I get it more because it's more like a computer. If they have 5G Max, fantastic. Right now, 5G on the phone, it's kind of like whatever. Like, anyway, the Apple One feedback was just. people saying that Apple One's available. Well, there was I got one tweet from someone who was in one of the countries where Premiere isn't available, so they currently subscribe to Apple Music and they had 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, but they weren't allowed to get access to Premiere because News Plus wasn't in their country. And in those cases, Apple is kind of leaving you in a lurch at the moment. Like, neither the individual or the family plan really appeals, because what you want is 2 terabytes of storage, and you know, you just can't do it. You have to get the family plan, then also pay for the 2 terabytes on top as a separate iCloud plan, right? So that just kind of sucks. And I'd have preferred it if Apple had like just offered the Premier plan in every country and just given a discount for not having News Plus in it, right? So if it was like $25 equivalent rather than $29,
because it isn't like News Plus is what we're all going to Premier over.
Yeah, like most people want Premier for the 2 terabytes of storage, realistically, and Fitness Plus to a lesser degree, right? And there's nothing about Fitness Plus that they couldn't offer it worldwide, right? Like, apart from, like, you know, language localization, but, you know, put it in English and then get around to the countries eventually. Like, I think that holding up Premiere from being available universally just because, like, News Plus is only in 5 countries is, like, wasn't a good move, in my opinion. So that is a problem. Like, if you're on 2 terabyte storage and you don't have access to a Premiere plan, yeah, you're kind of like, well, just you might as well just carry on what you're doing. The other thing was people were saying that, oh, look, for $1 extra a month, I can get, you know, Arcade and TV Plus or whatever, or, you know, it's basically free. But, I'm going to go on Apple One and then not use it, still carry on not using their services. And it's like, yeah, that is the point. Like, I'm not saying Apple One is going to make Arcade and TV Plus really good, right? Like, the services themselves, it's on Apple's onus to make the services better. Independently, the bundle is just a way to get, like, when those services are good, right, or appealing, the bundle is a way to get more, convince more people to pay for them, right? Like, so when TV Plus has, you know, instead of having 2 really really good shows, it has 20 really really good shows, then you'll come back and you'll be like, well, now I can get my Apple One bundle, and you'll probably end up spending slightly more than you would have done if you just bought it separately, right? So Apple One is not like the savior for Arcade if you don't like Arcade very much, or the savior of TV Plus if you don't like TV Plus very much. Like, News Plus is still the same service, it's just in Premiere now, and but I'm happy because I would never have paid for News Plus on its own, but now I occasionally get to use News Plus, you know, once or twice a week if there's an article in the Wall Street Journal or the Telegraph or, you know, one of these magazines that I just really want to check out. Well, now I can do it, and I don't feel so bad that I didn't have to pay you know, a separate $9.99 for the privilege. It still annoys me about, you know, how the news app's pretty rough in many places and how half the magazines are just dumb PDF instead of nicely formatted for the page. But, you know, that's a secondary concern. Like, Apple One itself is not going to make all the services really good. They still have to invest in making the services good. Apple One's just a, you know, a convincer on the plate for when you actually get around to it.
Have you used News Plus since you've been thrown into it?
Yeah, yeah. And not cool. And the first day I was just like, you know, just looking around it because I literally hadn't used it before in person because I never used the trial. But since there was a article about the lockdowns, the new lockdown in Britain,
yeah,
that was published in the Telegraph, and that required a paywall on the website. And I was actually looking for that feature that we talked about earlier in the year, the open links in news thing in Safari, which would automatically redirect you. So if you opened a web page that was paywalled in Safari, but you had access to it through the News Plus subscription, like the betas of iOS 14 would just let you immediately just take you to the news app and let you read it. Well, unfortunately, I realized that feature is actually gone. Like in 14.1, it's just the settings not there. So
the haters won. Yeah.
So you have to do it manually again, which is kind of annoying. But I did do it manually, and I got to read the article, which I wouldn't have done otherwise. And the Telegraph subscription cost £26 per month on its own. So if I was paying for that, that's basically the entire cost of Premiere in one go. So financially, I was very well off there.
And nice. You just saved journalism. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, on that axis, it feels kind of bad because I know that the Telegraph's only going to get some minor share of a $5 amount, right, for reading the article, whereas they probably want £26 a month from me, but I guess I can't have the guilt. I can't bear the guilt of the publishing.
You've been sleeping okay since then, I imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. I got value out of it and carried on. And since then, I've, you know, read like one or two other articles in it. Not enough to sustain a $9.99 subscription of its own, but that's what Apple One's for because, you know, I'm kind of paying for it somewhere in that $29.99 a month and not actually paying just a dedicated $10 a month for it. I think I would use the News Plus audio stories on a fairly regular basis, but that's not available to the UK either, which is kind of sad. Like, even though all the News Plus audio stories are all in English language, but they're all recorded in America at the moment. But I don't care. I'd love to listen to the American accents. That doesn't bother me, but they don't let me.
Yeah. There's also News Plus audio is it's a newer thing, and I've not yet dug into it since being put back into News Plus through Apple One, the bundle. But one thought I did have was this would be a cool feature to have on the watch. It's just like all of the, because right now the news app on the watch is 5 previews of stories that you can save later to read on your phone.
Yeah.
And that's the whole app, and it changes once a day, and that's it. But if you could just, you know, have it be, you know, that and all the audio stuff, then that's way more natural for the watch, I think, as, you know, no phone, you can dig into all your News Plus audio stuff that you've been missing. So.
App Figures is all about giving app makers the tools they need to get more downloads and revenue. You may already know them for analytics and App Store optimization. But now, App Figures can help you track competitors from how many downloads they're getting to how much money they're making, audience demographics, and even which SDKs they use. Their competitor intelligence features give you great context. Say a rival app adds a new feature or was mentioned in the news. With App Figures, you can see if that actually brought in more downloads. Got a great idea for an app or a game? With App Figures, you can figure out how big the market is and how much money you could be making with it. Whether you're growing your app or building a new one, App Figures has the tools you need to reduce risk and get more downloads. You don't need a large budget or a data science degree to do this kind of thing anymore. App Figures makes it affordable and simple. On top of tools, App Figures provides a lot of guides and tutorials to take you step by step through gaining more visibility with App Store search optimization and increasing your revenue by learning from your competitors. And they just released a free guide on that, actually. Head to appfigures.com/on/happyhour to try App Figures for free. If you like it, use our special code HH3030 to get 30% off for the next 3 months. That's appfigures.com/on/happyhour.
So we have some software releases to talk about today, this week. iOS 14.2, you know, it's one of those things where I could not map out like what is available and what's in beta and what's in public beta and what's like release candidate and all that. But I do know Big Sur is not out yet, but iOS 14.2 is out for everyone, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I just updated to it about 20 minutes ago because it literally only just came out when we were recording this.
And this is the version of iOS 14 with all the new emoji, of which there aren't many, but there are new emoji for the first time in iOS 14. And also a lot of really cool wallpapers. So that's really neat. If you weren't satisfied with the amount of like automatically changing from light mode to dark mode wallpapers, this update is for you. And then finally,
They actually have like photograph wallpapers again, like wallpapers that aren't abstract shapes.
Right. Yeah. They're quite nice. And they change from light to dark mode, which is wonderful. And HomePod intercom support. This is the feature that was announced when the HomePod Mini was announced. That's available for all HomePods. So this is works with HomePod and then your other device, whether it's I guess it also works with the phone as of this update and the iPad. But it's compatible with the Watch, it's compatible with the Mac, and that requires the right software version. But this is the feature where you can tell your HomePod to send a message to your family, certain speakers, certain zones, and it just sends it out kind of walkie-talkie style, but just using your HomePod system or the devices that are signed into your HomeKit home. And the way that you initiate them from the phone or the iPad, for example, is from the Home app on those devices. So now it's available. It's just like a little waveform sign on the Home app that you click on and kind of get through.
Yeah, because in 14.1, it only worked on the HomePod itself, so there was no like visual UI for it. So you had to have like a HomePod in multiple rooms, and you'd say, you know, talk to my other HomePod in the room and send this message over, and it would work. But you know, a lot of people don't have multiple HomePods to be able to use it. In my case, both my HomePods are in a stereo pair in the same room, so the settings didn't show up either. But on 14.2, you can use it with, you know, iPhone, iPad, Watch, and I think CarPlay works as well. Mm-hmm. And so now you just go into the Home app, you can configure it in settings. You can choose to get, so on your phone, for instance, you can choose to get notified of intercom messages never. So you can basically say, my phone does not want to be participating in intercom at all. So if you don't want to be annoyed by that stuff, you can turn it off per device, right? Or you can have intercom only when I'm at home on my phone. So if your presence is working with HomeKit and someone does an intercom message to intercom everybody, as long as you're at home, you get the notification. If you're not at home, you don't get it. Or the third option is just any time at all. So whether you're at home or away, the intercom message comes through, which is nice granularity. Mm-hmm. And you can also pick which family members inside your home work with intercom. So if you have like five family members, but two of them don't want to be on the intercom system and the other ones do, you can just toggle. There's literally just straight toggles in the HomeKit settings, which is nice. And you can choose which HomePods participate in it as well. So this is probably useful if you have like living room HomePods that don't really belong to, like, maybe they're just used for the Apple TV, right, for your home theater system. It doesn't necessarily make sense that those, you know, speak out people's voices when they're trying to talk to like the kitchen or whatever, so you can turn them off individually. And then beyond those kind of like, you know, system level filters, using your voice, you can target a person or you can target a room, or you can just say everyone in the house hears this message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and I tried it just before the show, and yeah, the sound quality is kind of bad, but you know, good enough. Like,
okay,
it worked. I mean, it worked first time, which is more than I can say for the walkie-talkie feature that they've had on Apple Watch for years. Which I swear, sometimes you just say it and it never did it, so then everyone gave up. I think it's cool though. Like, this is one of the things we've been asking for a long time, and they've delivered it. And in the very limited testing, it does seem to work, you know, reasonably well. If you want to activate it from an iOS device, you can use Siri, or you can go into the home app itself, and there's like you said, there's a little icon in the top right, and if you're on like the root page of the Home app, it targets the whole house, or if you go into the rooms, that button only targets the room that you're currently looking at. So mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a decent first implementation. I'm sure there's more to criticize and stuff once I actually get more chance to play around with it, because I feel like there's, you don't really know how well these things work until you get, like, you know, multiple members of your family actually using it day to day, and you see where the annoyances are and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at least from a passing glance, it seems to be done pretty well.
Yep. This is also the update that puts the music recognition tile in Control Center, or you have the option to add it there, and it uses Shazam. And we talked about this before, but I think the way it works is it's not just music around you; it's also music coming from your phone. So if you're watching, you know, a movie or something, and it has a song in it, you can activate this tile in Control Center, and it can try to recognize the song coming, you know, playing from the phone. So that's now there. There's an option to add. It's not default, but you can go and add that in settings in Control Center. Some other new things. There's if you have an iPhone 12 Pro or 12 Pro Max, that's the phone with the LiDAR sensor. And so now the Magnifier app is able to detect people nearby and report their distance. It uses LiDAR. So that's like a very literal use of the LiDAR app or the LiDAR sensor and the hardware. Is through this Magnifier app.
Nice accessibility feature.
Indeed. There's support for the iPhone 12 leather sleeve with MagSafe, which is not going to be available on... it's not out yet. We don't know when it will be out. It doesn't sound like it will come anytime soon. But the software now supports that leather sleeve. And that's the one where you put the phone down into the sleeve and it has the cutout for the time. And... so presumably it detects that it's this case and it only shows the time on the lock screen and not anything else. And I guess it always shows the time. Is that right?
I don't actually know. I assume the screen doesn't stay on. I guess it's probably like accelerometer based or something.
Yeah.
Because if you actually look at the leather sleeve photos, obviously no one's got them yet. Yeah. Not only is there the cutout for where the screen is and that shows the time with the background color matching for the case, right? Above that, there's also a cutout for where it looks like the proximity sensor or the ambient light sensor is. So the leather sleeve actually has two holes in the front. The big one, which is the screen cutout, and then a really small little black one, which is probably like the camera sensor or whatever, which has probably interplay somehow with making sure the screen turns on and off. Because I think in the iPhone event, they said you can make it show the time by tapping on it. So I don't think it shows all the time. You have to like tap on that little glass pane bit and it will light up with the time and align to the right spot.
Yeah, this update gives you the ability to use optimized battery charging for AirPods. And as people who had the first generation AirPods know, you know, if you use them regularly, you may get 2-3 years out of the battery and then the battery life just you know, gets shot down. So this is probably one of the battery optimized battery charging features I'll use the most, or like, you know, not think about and just turn on because I know the impact of that problem. Whereas everything else I use, either I don't notice the battery degradation or I don't have to deal with it, you know. So,
and this update adds all the now playing stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a better UI for if you have a lot more speakers in your home to be able to manage them and see what's playing on each one at a glance and quickly pause and play them or swap between them, which is a great feature to bring in as you're announcing and releasing the HomePod Mini, which, you know, people are more likely to buy a lot of and sprinkle them around the house. But it works with HomePods, AirPlay 2 speakers, the works. We spoke about this before, so I don't want to like dwell on it too much, but they've changed like how the lock screen works, and they've changed like the design of the now playing and controlling center too. One thing I did notice when updating today is a slight regression, is that the now playing information on the lock screen, so before you'd have like the album artwork and then you'd have the song name and then the artist and the album, right? And if the song name or the artist were too long for the width of the screen, they would scroll along like in a little marquee, yeah, so you could see the whole thing. Well, that doesn't happen anymore, so you just get permanent truncation.
This gets turned around so often on different parts of Apple systems, but there's always like, it used to fit, and now it won't fit, and now it won't scroll, and now it truncates. It's like a constant battle when you
make
a change.
They love adding truncation in.
Yeah.
So anyway, they fixed that. Someone actually tweeted me and said that's happened on CarPlay as well, that the now playing information on CarPlay doesn't scroll either. It's now static too, so...
Mm-hmm.
It's a backward step in that direction. And the other thing I would criticize on this one is that they've changed the interface when you open the audio sources AirPlay menu. In Control Center, it's this really nice, smooth animation. But on the lock screen, it's like pretty bad. It kind of statically jumps around and it doesn't look
very good. Well, because you don't have 5G, so...
Oh yeah, definitely because of that. Definitely.
Yeah, that's a streaming animation, and then if you have Apple TV 4K and you have HomePods and you've updated your Apple TV 4K to the latest software and your HomePods to the latest software, this is the big HomePod. Then you can use Dolby Atmos audio from your Apple TV 4K, which is interesting.
And what something I didn't realize when we talked about this last time, when you use the home cinema mode, or the home theater mode, as I think it's called when it's localized for the US, that takes over all sound on the Apple TV. So when you're using like the AirPlay option on, you know, previously or with the HomePod Mini, it only works for like video apps because it has to sync the audio up, right? So like when you're actively in like a video player application, then it works because it's acting like an AirPlay output. But there are a few TVOS video apps that don't play ball with the AirPlay system.
Like YouTube, I think, is one.
Yeah, YouTube's one. And all games previously would still play out TV speak to the, you know, the normal TV output, like over the HDMI port, because they're just the lag of the AirPlay system, it wouldn't be able to sync it up. But if you're using the new home cinema, home theater mode, it's all audio, including game audio. So it must be using, you know, optimized streaming or something, because it's pretty low latency and it works across the board, not just for like the AirPlay stream.
So you could play like Sayonara Wild Hearts on arcade, which is like a soundtrack driven game, and have that come through your HomePods.
You could indeed. And just remember, that doesn't mean the home theater mode is exclusive to the big HomePods, but you can still pair HomePod Minis to the Apple TV if you want to, but you won't get the surround sound, and you won't get, it'll only be for, it'll be like the old HomePod experience. It won't be like the new HomePod experience.
Yeah. In watchOS 7.1, which is the new watchOS update that's now available, there were headphone level alerts coming from the watch. So if you use your headphones, pair them with your watch, and you have them too high — this is also on iOS, but if you have them too high for too long, or, you know, it passes a certain threshold, you'll have an alert about that. And then the ECG, the electrocardiogram function, is now in Korea and in Russia. So there's, you know, two years on from the Series 4, and we're still seeing the ECG app expand to new countries. So
that reminds me, actually, do you remember that feature they announced for the Apple Watch? The notifications for blood oxygenation, the SPO2, that measure. Do you remember
SPO2? Yeah.
SPO2. They announced in the September event that late this year you'd get notifications when the SPO2 levels went out of whack, right? Similar to low heart rate or high heart rate notifications. Mm-hmm. But that has not shipped yet. So
yeah, that feature alone is like kind of the main reason I've been wearing the review unit Series 6 every day and not my Series 5 ceramic. Is like, at the end of the day, this thing is just a smarter health watch than the one it replaces. But of course, you're right, that feature's not out yet. So,
and I think they said they're going to add that feature to the existing watches too, because like my Series 5 can estimate SPO2 somehow. I don't know exactly how, but it does.
Yeah, it's always been a complicated formula where it's like a certain workout with a certain duration is at least part of the factor. And
yeah, because if you go into the health app on the phone, you can go to the SPO2 category and you can see it. And I don't have a Series 6, I only have Series 4, and it still shows up for me. So, and I believe that the notifications will apply to the older watches as well as the ones with the
oxygen sensor
inside.
Take back what I just said then.
Yeah. No, I mean, I assume the information is more accurate with the actual sensor, right? Otherwise, why did they put the sensor in? But yeah, that is a feature that they have promised for the end of the year and so far have not delivered on. So you've got to keep an eye out for that one. Happy Hour is brought to you by Survivor. Ahead of iPhone 12 mini and iPhone 12 Pro Max pre-orders tomorrow, why not pick up a case from Survivor from their new refined rugged range, with cases available for all iPhone 12 models. Survivor provides a form-fitting, flexible shell for your device, and that's tested up to 14 feet to military standards as far as device protection goes. The case uses a parametric pattern and three-layer construction. It offers advanced drop protection and ergonomic grip where your device needs it the most. Survivor's 40-core protection technology helps displace shock and provides cushion against severe impacts. This technology also increases drop height protection by 40% compared to traditional case materials. Even further, the Extreme and Endurance cases from Survivor feature a long-lasting antimicrobial protection layer that prevents 99.9% of surface bacteria and germs from gathering on your device. All cases from the new lineup are guaranteed for life and are 5G compatible for the fastest connection possible. Head to Verizon to shop the new Survivor cases, available for all iPhone 12 models. Special thanks to Survivor for sponsoring Happy Hour, and be sure to check out the giveaway on 9to5Mac to win an iPhone 12 Pro in partnership with Survivor.
And then macOS 11.0.1, it's I caught it as a release candidate. Is this actually out or what? I don't understand.
The macOS 0.01, yeah, that's not out yet.
Okay. So it's a beta version of Big Sur. There's still no Big Sur. There's certainly no 11.0, which is probably what is written into the new ARM Macs as they launch this year sometime. But
be like what happened with the phones, right? Where they didn't ship iOS 4.1 until the phones are out, and they started doing the 4.2 beta train, and this is the same equivalent, but it's 0.0.1 or whatever.
And do you know with macOS 10? As far as I've used it since Leopard, so you've had like 10.6, 10.6.1, 10.6.2, to go to 10.7, that was to go from Snow Leopard to Lion, then that's a major version update. In this case, we've gone from 10 dot something to 11.0. Are we going to be on 11.0.x? this whole time, and then it'll be like 11.0.1.1 is like the bug fix update.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if they follow the formula, then you're right. It should just be the tens decimal place, like the first decimal place,
right?
Will be like, so like next year's version will be 11.1, right? And the year after that will be 11.2,
right?
But you'd hope if they bump the big number up, they're going to make it match iOS.
But you know, the reason I thought of it is because you mentioned how it's kind of like it's the same thing they did with iOS 14.1. That was the version that did not include the iPhone 12 stuff, and then 14.0 had it, and so they were holding it back. This is like that, you know, in macOS parlance, this is like 11.0.1 is like a 14.1. If that's what we're doing, is we're on 11.0 and next year we'll have 11.1. And I think that's what we're doing. So
that's funny. Yeah. Because the quote bug fix version, so the iOS equivalent of like the .x.x.1 on Mac, they just do them as supplemental updates. So they never actually get the extra version number, right? So.
I see.
Yeah, so if you're following the formula, then this is the equivalent of like 10.8.1. This
yeah, is 10. Right.
8.1. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll have all 11. We'll go up to like 11.0.12. You know, some weird numbers like that. But I
hope you're. I mean, you're completely right in what you just said, but I hope you're wrong in that Apple just changes the numbering system to just work like how every other platform.
But then that would mean like next year we have macOS 12 and then Mac.
Correct. Yeah.
If they were in sync, like if they just said, this is macOS 14, like they did with tvOS, then I would say probably. But I think that this is, we're on 11, and it's like legacy Mac stuff is what.
At some point, they got to drop the numbers entirely, right? Like, because they can't just keep letting the numbers go up and up and up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. what else have we got this week? So we're talking on Thursday, and on Friday is the pre-order date for the iPhone 12 mini, the iPhone 12 Pro Max, so the smallest and biggest iPhones this year. And that's coming 2 weeks after the release of iPhone 12 and 12 Pro. The release date will be 3 weeks later than the first release date was. And then HomePod mini, all pre-orders for these devices, the two devices, will be on Friday morning. And then fast forward a week, next Friday, the two phones come out, and then at some point after that, the HomePod mini comes out.
So the week beginning, November 16th.
Yes.
Yeah,
so. I mean, I kind of hope that they just, it's not that loose, that they kind of like surprise and delight, but.
They just start on the Monday? Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, or just like sporadically, you know, like it's just, yeah, here they are, they're in stores now, like if you pre-order one, you gotta wait or something, I don't know. So that pre-order date is arriving, and this gets us through the big items from the second Apple event this fall. There's still a number of accessories, the sleeve, the leather sleeve accessories that we talked about. It's now supported in iOS for what that's worth. I guess that's the color matching feature of the wallpaper. MagSafe Duo. Those two things are not going to be out yet, as far as we know, for the foreseeable future. Who knows what year they come out. But at least the main products of that second Apple event will be out about a week week and a half from now, it sounds like.
Are you ordering the Max, right? Or are you not because you got the review units?
I'm really keen on getting the Max, yeah. I mean, it's not tomorrow yet, but yeah, as long as I can swing it, I will.
Okay, so that's a yes.
I mean,
Zach's on the fence, that's a yes.
No. It's not like I don't want it. I'm not so sure. It's like, no, I definitely want it. I just got to make sure I can budget it. Because what I did with the review units was I just canceled the pickup for the 12 Pro that I ordered and then put that into an iPad Air 4.
Oh, yeah, you bought the iPad, didn't you?
Yeah, which I've been quite happy with. You know, it turns out when it's not so high, like when the cut doesn't cost so much, it's, you know, the ratio there of price to enjoyment is easier to balance, so.
Yeah, the iPad Air is the perfect.
Oh, and I meant to say this last week, but one of my colleagues at Space Explored, they were going to buy an iPad Pro because their Mac hardware is getting dated, and they know that they're going to wait for an ARM Mac. And they said, "I'm just going to do an iPad Pro." And I said, "Wait, no! Why do you want a Pro? Get the new Air." And they didn't know about that. And I said, "They're cheaper. They come in different colors, and they work with the same accessories." And they did, and they love it. So.
Yeah, I mean, all our complaints about, like, you know, using the iPad for at work, they dissolve when you're getting the iPad for, like, $600 instead. Then it's just, you know, you can enjoy it for what it is. You don't
like,
worry
yeah,
about,
I, it. My, I, and I had fun. I went through the process of, like, looking at how the app library or the folder structure works there on the iPhone.
Zach, are you trying to tell me that Apple can put all of its features from iPhone onto the iPad in the same year?
No. So I looked at how that was modeled, you know, like, what categories does it make and select, and how is it organized? Because I used to have a folder system that was very similar, with a few changes. But I took what they did on the phone, and I made that what I did on the iPad home screen. And then the dock is like my entertainment apps, because that's how I primarily want to use the iPad. And it's been good. So hey, anyway,
what do you think about the Mini? By the way, do you think it's gonna be a popular model?
The phone?
Yeah, the iPhone 12 Mini.
My kid's mom wants one. Like, she's going to pre-order it. And she had the 11 Pro Max before. And she thinks it looks really cute and wants it really bad. So she's going to pre-order that.
Yeah, I can't decide whether it's going to be, like, something that they kind of do once and then it doesn't get enough sales, so it just kind of fades away and they don't do it next year. Or if it's going to be, like, the most popular model apart from the 12.
Well, yeah, it's funny because like the least expensive product tends to be like the popular product, you know, at least in terms of numbers. And it's the least expensive in terms of the new iPhone 12, you know. It wasn't out for the first 3 weeks in terms of the iPhone 12 being available. But if you walk into a store and you don't want to spend as much money as you might have to, I think if you look at the Mini and you look at the 12, the $100 price difference there, it's going to be – you really have to want a bigger screen, even though that was the default screen before for the lowest price. So I think in that regard, the Mini will dominate based on being the most affordable, you know, new phone. And it'll be the 12 that gets kind of I suspect those sales will be lower. And that's the one where they're like, do we really even need this 12? Why not just have iPhone Pro and iPhone Pro Max? You know, like that would be if the data, you know, goes that way, logical. Because it does seem like I guess the 12 makes the Pro look better in terms of like, well, I don't know. I don't think it makes it look better at all. It makes
I mean, its only reason for existence is the difference in screen size, right? And I guess that's the edge. It's like Apple's worried that they can't just have the Mini because people would be turned off by the screen being too small. So they kind of have to have the step up, which has basically the same as the Mini, but with a bigger screen before you go for that, you know, $300, $250 jump to get up to the Pro.
Well, in some formulation, like if you take away costs, then they took away the smaller screens that they had before, which was the size of an iPhone 10, when they made the 12 Pro the size of an iPhone 11 or iPhone 10R, you know, they made that even bigger. So then so that gives them more reason to introduce the Mini this year. It's just that the cost is way different. But
yeah, like I guess that's the center of my question. It's like, did Apple make the Mini because they wanted the screen size variety, or did they have to make the Mini because they knew the baseline 12 was going to be $100 more than the phone was started last year? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it just a price concession, so they kind of have to have it?
Yeah, I don't know, but there is measurable appeal in it being a smaller than even the iPhone 10, because this year more so than usual from at least people that we hear talk about it, I think because it's new, it's different this year, is that you know, you can get a bigger phone than you've ever could get before, but also you can get a smaller phone, which is, I think, more different than like the change to the bigger phone is. Honestly, if not for the telephoto camera, the 2x or 2.5x camera, they all of the phones feel like pro phones this year, you know, and having the review unit 12 to use. I mean, if it had the telephoto camera, then it'd be like, this is a pro phone. Like, you know, it's because of the OLED screen and the new design. Like I keep saying this, you know, when we talk about this, but an iPhone 12 feels more premium than an iPhone XS or 11 Pro. Mm-hmm. And that it's the newest design. They're all OLED. It's a little bit bigger, but not huge. And in the case of the 10S, you don't have you lose the 2X for half X. So it's not that big of a change. And then also all the things that you do get, like the iPhone 12 is a 5G phone for when that matters. The iPhone 11 Pro is not. And so even feature wise, not to mention the processor, like if that's something that makes a difference in your user experience. I think that many will be like the new default phone as long as, cause it's not too small. And, you know, like whenever Apple made the iPhone 6 and that was the bigger screen, and they're like, this is the most popular iPhone this year. Well, yeah, it's the new phone. Like, you know, you didn't give us the choice for the other one. Like, and this is the first time where we've got, like, you really have a wide range, which you've got three sizes, but effectively, like, you know, very different price points and everything. And you've got, you know, that whereas before the Pro phone, so the XS or the 11 Pro were the small phones for a premium, and now you can get a small phone that is premium but not for a premium cost. It's kind of nice.
For sure.
Yep.
We are sponsored this week by Pillow. Getting a good night's sleep is underrated, but with a little help, it can be life-changing. Pillow is an all-in-one sleep tracking solution to help you be more aware of your sleep patterns and discover what might be affecting your sleep quality. If you have an Apple Watch, tracking your sleep is as easy as wearing it to bed. Pillow will track and analyze your sleep automatically. And with iOS 14, you can get a sleep report on your home screen with the Pillow widget. Available in small and medium sizes, it shows your latest sleep report in a beautiful layout. Just tap on the widget to go straight to your sleep session analysis. Also new with iOS 14, Pillow integrates beautifully with the system's sleep modes. For instance, you can launch Pillow or start a sleep session when your scheduled bedtime or wind down modes kick in. And Pillow launched all of these features on iOS 14's launch day, so they were ready for their customers immediately, and you can use them right now. One of Pillow's most loved features is the ability to get a detailed heart rate diagram of every sleep session. Compare your sleep quality with your weight, steps, caffeine consumption, and many other health metrics to discover how they might be affecting how you sleep. And you can enable the recording mode, so Pillow will save the sounds that you make during sleep, from sleep talking to sleep apnea, snoring, or just unexpected noises during the night. You can record it and play it back, and a lot of users have been surprised by the results. And of course, Pillow is privacy-minded. All of your sleep and audio data is encrypted and stored on your device, and when it's synced with iCloud, it's using end-to-end encryption. Pillow is available in the App Store for iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. Discover all of Pillow's features at naybox.com/pillow. That's naybox.com/pillow. Sleep well and stay safe. Our thanks to Pillow for their support of 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
Oh, right. What else have we got? We've got...
I just want to mention the HomePod Pandora thing quickly.
Yeah. So in addition to HomePod having a software update today, unrelated to that we knew, Pandora is now on the HomePod. So how does that work?
Yeah, so they obviously announced this alongside the... Well, technically they announced this in June, and then they said at the HomePod mini event that Apple was working with Pandora and Amazon Music and others... And obviously the big others includes Spotify, but no one's confirmed anything on that basis yet. And just this week, Spotify started rolling out streaming support on Apple Watch. So that's about, 2 years too late than compared to when it was possible. So if you're looking for Spotify and HomePod, maybe we'll see you in 2022, given their timeline. And also at the moment, given all the antitrust stuff, it kind of helps Spotify by not supporting the feature, because saying how like Apple's disadvantaging them in blah 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 way, but maybe they'll do it. But I think there was a reason why they weren't mentioned in the event, let's put it that way. But anyway, the Pandora was announced and it's shipping now. So if you're in the US, you can get the Pandora app and you can go into the home app on your iPhone or your iPad and set up the music service to work with the HomePod. So instead of having to talk to Apple Music on the HomePod, you can talk directly to Pandora instead. You can use either if you want to. Apple Music starts as the default option, you know, as it does today. Mm-hmm. And you can just say, like, Pandora, play this on Pandora, or, you know, find my place on Pandora. Or you can go into the home app settings and change the default service from Apple Music to Pandora, so you no longer have to qualify your requests with the word Pandora.
Does
the music request go to the app?
Yeah, does it distinguish between... like one thing that Amazon does on Echo is it distinguishes between your catalog, your library of like on demand music, and your radio. So just like we have Apple Music, you know, mm-hmm. it's your library of music. You've also got Apple Music Radio as just your like algorithm streaming stuff. Does this let you distinguish that, or is it you're doing one or the other? Because I know Pandora
it's setting the default.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is one of my complaints. There is no granularity at all.
Okay.
I say default music service, that same setting controls podcasts and audiobooks as well.
Logical. It's like it's made for Spotify because they have all of that in one.
In the same application. Yeah, yeah. I know.
Pandora also does podcasts. So.
Yeah, yeah. So if you set Pandora as your default service, you can still get Apple Podcasts to play by specifying Apple Podcasts. But if you just say play a podcast, it will try and ask Pandora first.
Yeah, so it's not as fair as it could be based on what Amazon's shown to be possible.
I don't think it's about fairness. I think it's just about like functionality, right? Because you could very easily have like, I want to use this service for music, I want to use this service for podcasts, and I want to use this service for audiobooks. Because like, I think a lot of people say want to use Apple Music for music, but they probably have a different provider for audiobooks than Apple Books, let's be realistic. or similar with podcasts. Like, I think there's a lot of people out there who enjoy and use Apple Music, but they want to use like Overcast or whatever on the HomePod. And
or Spotify, yeah.
Right? Overcast doesn't support the new API yet, but imagine they did.
Yeah.
So that's just like a functionality gap that hopefully they can address. Similarly, you can't set your preferences per user. So whatever the default service is on that HomePod, it doesn't matter which person's asking, that'll always apply. Now, the service can know who's speaking, so it can personalize your response. But like, I couldn't say use Apple Music as my preference, and then you ask the HomePod too, and it use a different service. The default service applies to the device, not to the user account.
Gotcha.
So that is a limitation.
Is it to the device though? Like if you had one in one room and one in the other, like it could be, you know, the adult has Apple Music and the kid has Pandora, for example, or something?
I think you can do it differently for each device, but I only have like a stereo pair, so I can't tell you, to be honest.
And when we say Pandora, I imagine this is what at one point was called Pandora One or Premium, where it's the on-demand stuff. It's like the same price as Apple Music, but it's Pandora because, you know, back in my day, Pandora was your internet radio. Not on demand stuff.
Yeah, they still have radio, but they've integrated like the stream music for library equivalent as well.
So
it's everything all in one.
Yeah.
So that is a limitation, but the way the system works is really clever because you don't actually need like every integration that works on the HomePod today. It channels it off through the phone, right? That's the personal request system. So the phone has to be on Wi-Fi at home, because when you ask the HomePod a question like send a text message or set a reminder, it has to like basically tell the phone to go and do it, and then it just plays the answer back on the HomePod. Mm-hmm. What's happening with these new cloud music service integrations is the like SiriKit domain /intent system is running on a server. So when you ask, basically you have a client app, like the client app on your phone, so you have to download Pandora on your phone. But all that does is like make it able to show up in the home settings and let you enter like your username and password to authenticate the device. The actual like asking the requests and responding to them, that's all happening on a server. So you can turn your phone off, or your phone can be not at home, and you could still ask Pandora to play your music library, just like how you can ask Apple Music to play your library on the HomePod without having
to do the work.
So that's really cool, right? And that all works because it's like this new cloud intents API that they obviously let at the moment's restricted to like special entitlements, so only their select partners can use it for their music service. But I hopefully longer term they like allow any app that, so whether it's, you know, calendars, messaging, reminders, any of it, whatever, all their supported domains, hopefully in the future they'll open it up so all of them can be serviced by a cloud intent as well.
Yeah.
So you can lose the device dependency. Because I just think it just makes it faster, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, I think it's sometimes when you ask the HomePod to, like, send a text message, it has to go and find your phone and, you know, relay it through that. And it's slow, right? Because it has to, like, find the phone and, mm-hmm. you know, send the answer. It's basically doing device hops that you shouldn't really need to. Ideally, you ask the HomePod to send a text message, it just communicates with the iMessage server directly and gives you the answer back, which is what the phone does, right? That's what the phone's doing. But the HomePod at the moment has to relay everything through the connected device through personal request.
As if it were like a very slow Apple Watch from
the first
year.
But these new, they're starting with music, so now they're serviced and run through the HomePod direct to the internet, and hopefully they can expand that in the future to, you know, more categories of things.
Cool. Nice. Well, that's the show for the week. That's it.
Wait, nothing else happened, right?
Wait, there's one more thing.
Nice.
It's the Apple event on Tuesday. And this is the third Apple event of the fall. It has to be the ARM Mac event, the Apple Silicon event, in which we see, as promised, the first Apple computer switch from Intel to Apple's first Mac class ARM chip. So this is what we think to be some version of the A14, whether it's called A14T or some other, you know, clever name, or even M14 or something else like that. You know, we'll see what it's called, but we'll find out on Tuesday. More about the chip, the branding, the marketing, whether that, what, maybe hopefully, like, what differences it adds to the hardware. So surely this event will say, because of this change, we can now afford to do this on the Mac. Of course, we want to know which Macs go first. We think it's going to be the MacBook Pro 13-inch, and it sounds like MacBook Air 13-inch. Not to have a new 12-inch yet, or, you know, who knows what happens there. And there's even a new addition this week, which is that the 16-inch MacBook Pro will also transition soon, probably not at the same time as the 2 13-inch models, but likely before the desktops make this transition to Apple Silicon. And it doesn't sound like these new Macs are much different aside from the chip. So that's where the big question of, like, what does this afford in the Mac come in? You know, whether it's battery life or, you know, 5G or just LTE, you know, we'll take any of that cellular. You know, what does it give us on the Mac? What's the reason to care? You know, so we'll see. But
primarily, obviously, the chip will be better, right? And the chip alone being better for both performance and efficiency is a big deal, right? That's the main driving reason why they're doing this. Like, the Intel roadmap has slowed down in terms of year-over-year progress. You can basically buy, you know, the 2016 MacBook Pro that I have here is basically, you know, in the ballpark of the same speed as the 2019 16-inch MacBook Pro in terms of speed, right? The only differences are, like, everything else about it, like the graphics card, but, like, the raw CPU speed is, you know, roughly comparable.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't get as hot and stuff on the 16-inch. But the CPU, like the bit that Intel provides, you know, not a big change. And the reason Apple's going through this hassle of ditching Intel CPUs and moving to their own silicon is primarily to be able to boast and deliver the performance gains that we've seen them achieve on iPhones and iPads over the last countless how many years. Like, people just take it for granted at this point, but it's like the A14 is 20% faster than the A13. The A13 is 20% faster than the thing before, and the A11 was 50% faster than the A10. Blah, 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 blah. Like, getting that consistent year-over-year improvement is really hard, like, and not trivial, right? And the CPU space on the on desktops for x86 has slowed down to a crawl, and basically very little change happens now, at least with Intel chips, which is obviously what Apple was using. And so they had an option right? If they want to keep investing in the Mac and they want to keep the Mac getting better, they maybe could have gone to like an AMD pipeline, right? But I think what they saw is their own silicon teams are beating AMD as well. So they might as well do that. And so, you know, back in 2017 or 2018, where they exactly made this choice, they were like, great, now we're going to design CPUs and GPUs and everything else to make the Macs run on ARM. And I am very expectant that when they come out next week and they show them off, they're going to say, look, this computer has better performance than the computer it replaces in the same form factor, and the battery life is twice as long. Like, at a very minimum level, that is what we're going to see next week, right? Like, the stuff about 5G and, you know, Face ID and all this other stuff, right, which would be great, all of that stuff is easier for them to do now they've switched to the same kind of chips that they use in iPhone and iPads, but it wasn't required, right? Like,
and they already had their own chips in Macs for other things.
Yeah, like they could have added Face ID support to the T2 chip, right? Like, yeah, just like, yeah, how they supported fingerprint recognition through the same system. They could have done it with Face ID if they really wanted to. Like, they could have added a modem to things. Like, the core reason why they're switching from Intel to, you know, an Apple chip is performance and efficiency.
And that's why the tagline for the event is high speed. Oh, no, that was the iPhone 12 event. Right,
so, but you know our theory. You have to roll the event further on.
Exactly.
Then it lines up.
So that's right.
You have the blue event. Yeah, from September. That was the blue iPhone. Then you have high speed, and that's this one.
Yeah.
And so one more thing. That's
stage
the March event. That there's going to be another event in March, right?
Or that's January, for that matter.
So look, regardless of anything else, they're going to deliver, I firmly believe, either the same performance or better performance, and you're going to get like twice the amount of battery. And maybe on the Air, so one of the rumored updates is for the 13-inch MacBook Air, maybe they'll be able to make that fanless now, because the ARM equivalent chip will be able to provide the same or better performance, but way more efficient, so it might not need a fan.
Yeah,
the higher end machines are still going to need fans. Like, Apple isn't magic, they can't change physics. Yeah. This stuff gets hot and then
the fans are to enable performance, right?
Yeah, exactly. The fans make the performance even better. So, but maybe for the MacBook Air now, they can make that fanless, which would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the 12-inch ad says, is that Apple and overseas suppliers are ramping up production on a new 13-inch and 16-inch MacBook Pro and a new 13-inch MacBook Air. But it specifically says that the two smaller, the 13-inch laptops, are further along in production, which kind of hedges the fact that maybe the 16-inch isn't ready. We won't see it next week. We'll see, because both the 13-inch Pro and the 13-inch Air share characteristics like the fact that their GPUs are not very good. That's talking about the current Intel ones, right? So they could basically use, they could use A14X, or they could use A14 that we see in the iPad Air. And, you know, obviously you have to do some minor adjustments to support like more USB ports or whatever, but that core performance profile can very easily, quote unquote, very easily put into a laptop form factor and work for them, right? And they can easily supplant the 13-inch Air and the 13-inch Pros, because they already beat like them on the benchmarks. It's not even a question. We are yet to see Apple deliver like chips that can beat the performance of like the high-end 16-inch configurations, right? That's not to say they can't, but it's clearly going to be more work for them. And you would imagine that as they start this transition, they start with the stuff that's easier and they get to the stuff that's harder. So the fact that the 16-inch MacBook Pro is even in production at all, or, you know, even in testing stage, is interesting, right? Because I think on that one, they can't just use like the same A14 chip. They're going to have architecture differences, right, to be able to boast performance improvements in both CPU and GPUs, on the CPU and GPU spectrum. If they're ready to do that next week, that'd be really, really cool. And if you remember way back in March or April, I think Gurman said that Apple was working on a 12-core chip to power the ARM Mac. And if you remember to last week's episode, the China Times said Apple was working on A14X, which would appear in MacBooks, and they were working on A14T, which would have, you know, a beefier GPU. So maybe the A14T, whatever it finally is named for branding reasons, is what ends up in the 16-inch as well as the iMac, for instance, right? So that's all cool. Like, I'm fully on board. However, the Bloomberg report does also say that beyond the processor switch, the devices won't have significant design changes, which is a bit of a letdown, right? Like, I was kind of hoping that Apple had timed it perfectly. So along with, you know, the massive juncture in chip architecture, and along with the performance differences, they would also have something else, because, you know, the laptops look the same for a while. Even the 16-inch basically looked the same as the 15-inch, but the bezels got smaller, right? Like,
yeah, a little bit smaller, yeah.
Yeah, and a little bit smaller, yeah.
Yeah.
The bezels certainly aren't as, like, streamlined as you want them to be. They're not curved at the edges, right? Like, it's not like a rounded screen like the iPad is, for instance. And there are pretty obvious feature things, tent poles, that the iPhone and the iPad have and the Mac doesn't. You already mentioned, like, 5G or cellular or Face ID, right? Or even just, like, instant on. So, you know how an iPad, you can turn it off and turn it on and it just wakes up instantly? They kind of promised that years ago for the Mac, but they never truly delivered it, right? It's not as nowhere.
Well, and they increased security, and that got them further from that. But by the way that the OS is secure. So the more secure it got, the slower it got, to the point where you're like, you are back to the pre instant on era.
Yeah, and you need like a fingerprint to unlock it, right? Whereas if they had Face ID, it'd feel way better. Or even just even, you know, more trivially, make them look different. Maybe you could have like a black one, or it just looks cool.
And maybe there will be colors, and maybe they'll only be in the Air, and the Pro won't have colors, because that's the Air iPad lineup, you know, right now. You do, you know, you barely get a color in the Pro phone lineup. You get more colors in the not higher end lineup. But that's all what we're here to see next week.
yeah, and Bloomberg says these ones aren't going to have significant design changes. Fine.
And this is probably when we hear that there's the touchscreen Macs coming. I think the Bloomberg report. I think it would know that, and it'll be a big surprise if touchscreen is there, because it's not been reported or rumored or anything like that.
I don't think touch is happening anytime soon. I know people keep looking at the Big Sur like design refresh, and they're like, these things are bigger. It must mean touchscreens are happening. Like, the number one thing that Apple needs to get out of its operating system to be able to do a touchscreen is to like be able to scroll a list and it'd be smooth. You know, like how you scroll a list on an iPhone or iPad, it just feels like effortless. Scroll a list on a Mac, the frame rate, the interaction, it's still not the same. It's not even in the ballpark. And even on the ARM DTK that I may or may not possess, I can tell you, scrolling around on that thing, it still doesn't feel great, right? Like, it doesn't matter if the buttons are bigger. If you can scroll and it still feels janky, they're not going to do the art. That's what's holding the touchscreen Macs back. Like, it's not the design. Let's be realistic. So, look, I would have loved it if they could have coordinated big design and big new features along with the CPU update. But Bloomberg seems to suggest that's not happening. Okay, fair enough. You're still going to get it's still going to be great, whatever they do next week. I think the transition from Intel to Apple's own chips alone is going to be significant.
And hopefully, like, seriously, hopefully they do coordinate the redesign with the iMac, which Bloomberg says comes next year. Because if we get, like, it's understandable in the MacBook lineup, which it's because the MacBook lineup is nowhere near as dated as the way that the iMac is designed right now. These are a departure from like the 2012 MacBook Pro. I mean, they're similar, but we had like the 2016 big shuffle, and we're still kind of in that era. Even with the 16s, like you said, and even with the MacBook Air being like the MacBook Air, like the newest design, because it's like the wedge form factor in this design language. So we get it on the MacBooks, but if the iMac has the current design, but the Apple chip is like, what? Like, why? And then Bloomberg mentions Mac Mini being one next year to get the change, and then Mac Pro, so that covers the whole desktop lineup. But Mac Pro has an obvious design change, and that I think Mark Gurman describes a half-sized version of it for some reason.
Well, so one of the things we're expecting, and Apple basically said in June, is that Apple Silicon Macs are going to have, they're not going to have like a separate GPU. It's going to be on the chip. Right?
Okay.
So if you don't need a big honking GPU and you just have it all on a chip, maybe you can make the Mac Pro case smaller because you don't need the space for the GPU.
Yeah. Right? Can is the half size when like this is the Apple Silicon Mac and we still have the Mac Pro as expandable as it is today, and hopefully we update it in the future, or is is there any reason why they can't give the attention to the Mac Pro, use Apple Silicon, and keep it as kind of customizable, I guess the way that they call it, as modular as it is today?
Yeah, that is a good question.
I mean, GPU-wise, like, it's not going to – you get what you get, but you can always add GPU to it. If you do, like, eGPU, then you can rely on the external one. I don't know how eGPU will work with this.
Yeah, I mean, in the pros, you can, like, spec out – you can have one GPU, you can have two GPUs, you can have three GPUs, you can have four GPUs, right? In the current Pro, you can have four GPUs. So that would be a loss, right? If they go into, like, a unified architecture type situation – maybe they just have, like, you know, you can't upgrade it or swap them out after the fact, but you could just have a really beefy chip that has the GPU on board. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe there's solutions there. I'm sure there's also other losses, but just by making the case smaller, because, like, they have made a big deal about the Mac Pro being this kind of modular system that is upgradable. That's kind of its whole reason for existence.
No one that wants the Mac Pro says, I wish this thing was smaller, because we've had the smaller Mac Pro before. It wasn't a hit.
Yeah, and people use the big, like, Apple doesn't ship a smaller case if you buy the one without the four GPUs in it, right? They ship the big case because you're meant to, like, put an extra hard drive inside, or you can put all these, you know, Afterburner card in there, or you can just have, if you want to have SATA drives, you can just have, like, a, you know, a mini, like, NAS RAID array just inside the computer, because it's, like, all nicely contained in the same thing. Like, that is part of the appeal of the Mac Pro, right? It's just a big case that you can stuff stuff inside without having to have, you know, external cables wiring everywhere to, like, Thunderbolt accessories. And if they just make it roundly smaller, then, yeah, that is going to be a bit of a loss. Okay. I wonder whether, because they said they're going to make the ARM transition within 2 years, right? But I don't know that necessarily means they stop selling all the old ones.
Well, is there, you know, let's just say we're talking A14, you know, X, for example. Is there, we put in, I guess it's the core counts or what the difference is, but it's essentially like, you know, four A14Xs. And so we've got four times the power of one A14 chip.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they just design, like, instead of putting literally four chips in there, they just design a bigger A14.
Yeah, the core, because otherwise there's too much redundancy in the non-CPU and GPU stuff. But
yeah, yeah, like, and you end up paying costs in terms of, like, data transfer between the chips, right? Like,
sure, yeah.
One of the big gains that you get from putting the CPU and the GPU on the same thing is you can have unified memory. So, like, if you buy a, like, my gaming PC today, the GPU has its own 8 gigs of RAM on it, right? Like, when you go on spec out a Mac, a desktop Mac, the GPUs, they say, like, 4 gigs of, you know, HBM2 RAM or whatever, or 8 gigs of HBM2 RAM. And what's happening there is you have your RAM that applies to the computer and the CPU, and then the GPU itself has its own RAM. But you hit performance, like, issues where, like, the CPU has to, like, load the textures that the GPU is going to show, and then it has to, like, copy the memory over to the GPU one. So that copying is, you know, in the scheme of things, fast, but when you're trying to optimize performance every way possible, it gets slow, right? That's a bottleneck. And so one of the advantages that Apple is saying, and this is, they basically said this at a WWC session already, that they'll be able to wield, is they'll be able to get better performance just by having everything on a unified memory system. So obviously, right now, this is how iPhone and iPads work, right? But you only get, like, 6 gigs of RAM at the moment in the biggest A14 chip. Well, presumably the Mac versions will have more RAM, because they're going to have to. So, but if you had 16 gigs of RAM instead, then the GPU doesn't have to, the GPU and the CPU don't have to do the shuttling around with, like, oh, now we'll put this memory on the GPU side and then we'll send it back. Like, it can all be in one place, and pretty much the transistors are just closer together and there's less hops there if you go through, so it's faster. So I don't think they would, like, offer an ARM Mac Pro that also supports, like, big external GPUs, because I just don't think it's going to work like that.
Okay.
So they're going to have to come up with alternatives there.
Okay.
But they could still just have a big case and let people have expandability in every other dimension. Do you know what I mean?
Like, right, yeah.
They don't have to make it smaller. So
it can be more expandable than the 2013 Mac Pro was.
Exactly, right? Like, yeah. And people are going to be worried about that. But luckily, I'm not in the market for Mac Pro, so it doesn't bother me. I am looking forward to the iMac redesign. Like, please make it look nice, but
make it look different,
and make it look different. And yeah. But Bloomberg seems pretty clear that's not coming to, like, spring or summer.
Okay, yeah. And then this event, the One More Thing event, we don't believe that there will be AirTags, AirPod Studio, the over ear headphones. Those two things don't seem like they're targeted for this event, and which just means one more Apple event without it. Although
it's like all these events at the moment are an hour long, right?
Yeah.
They could, like, if this was a in-person event, they have to be like 2 hours to make it work. And the people coming.
They've shown the watch, and they've shown the iPhones, and they've shown the iPad Air, and they've, you know, they've shown the HomePod Mini. There is room for like something very small at the front, you know, and obviously they could, if they really wanted to do a One More Thing event, like in this case, the One More Thing is, this is the last event of the year, and this is the big one if you're a Mac nerd like us. But they don't have to include a One More Thing in the keynote, you know, so it doesn't have to have a surprise at the end to be worthy of this name. This is the One More Thing event. So if those things come, they'll be a surprise, but they're not expected to be here, even though, you know, they're in the pipeline.
Yeah. Like, you can time it out. They can fit, like, say they do have the 13 inches and a 16 inch. They can fit that in an hour easily. They can have some demos. They can chat about how good their processors are.
They can show all the iOS apps that used to just be on the iPad or iPhone, and now they can run on your Mac. Yeah.
They can give you a Big Sur release date. They can do a nice Big Sur demo. Like, that can easily fill an hour, and mm-hmm. that'd be good.
Yep.
I mean, as much as I'd love to see like AirTags or something else come out, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
Okay. And then lastly, there's an AirPods Pro replacement program where if you've got the in-ear AirPods and your sound is funky, like something going wrong with them, basically if you have AirPods Pro produced before a certain date, you may be eligible to have replacement units provided. And so it's worth checking out. I haven't looked at yet if mine are affected by this. I'm not sure that I haven't. The previous pair I had an issue, but I replaced them on my own and I was, you know, gone, come and gone. But I do need to look at my serial number and see if they qualify, because why not if they do? And then after that, there's an AirPods 3 part leak of some sort where you kind of get a shot of what claims to be the third generation AirPods, not Pro, but AirPods. And you can see, based on what this shows, if it's legitimate, the inspiration that comes from the current AirPods Pro, but it's a very half-baked part, if anything. So
it's just like the plastic shell. You can't really see like the actual speaker grills or anything, because it's just not there.
Right.
But it does kind of imply that the tips aren't replaceable, and it's just kind of like the current AirPods but smaller, which I'm very happy for. So
sure.
I'm going to assume it's like that.
And then finally, we also don't expect this to be an iPad Pro event, even though the iPad Pro has some catching up to do in different ways with the iPad Air, but it's that the iPad Pro, what we have this week is a story that says that the first version with mini LED, so this is the move beyond just LCD, but mini LED could be available in the first quarter of next year. So this could be the spring event or sometime between, you know, beginning of the year and that.
And I could very likely see that this, whenever this iPad Pro update comes up, it basically shares the CPU that's in, like, the 13-inch MacBook Pro, for instance.
Because yeah.
As well as all the performance gains, one of the reasons Apple's doing this transition is because it's economies of scale, and it will make their bill of materials cheaper across the board because they can just reuse a lot of it.
Yep. And you mentioned the fanless aspect of an ARM MacBook Air. I'm very curious about that, too, because if you've got the same performance as an iPad Pro, which you can put into like a keyboard, you know, with the Magic Keyboard with the trackpad, then that's so similar, and it would just be very neat if you can also, if you know, you have, because the iPad's fanless, it always has been, and you can get some very good performance out of it. That'd be a neat distinction if that was the difference between an Air and a Pro, is fan or no fan, and it's basically like, you know, if you want higher performance, you require a fan. If you want the slickest thing like an iPad, then you don't have to have one. And the iPad Pro is just an example of how you can have high performance and not require a fan, because it's not that high. Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right. I think that's everything until we talk next week, at which point I'll have pre-ordered definitely a couple of HomePod Minis. I want to order two to start out with and test one individually, test one in a stereo pair. And then, you know, in all likelihood, I'll have pre-ordered the iPhone 12 Pro Max, and
I'll have pre-ordered the HomePod Mini.
Yeah, cool. I'll see if we can share a Wi-Fi network over the ocean, and I'll intercom you.
We'll intercom each other. Well, I'm looking forward to the event on Tuesday.
Me too. Yeah. It came soon, didn't it? It came quick. All right, I will talk to you then. In the meantime, this is the Happy Hour Podcast. You can subscribe if you enjoy the show. If you're new, we really appreciate that. If you've been listening for a long time, please share the show with a friend so they can discover the show too. We really appreciate that as well. If you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZac. That's APOLLOZAC. I also write at spaceexplorer.com and the 9to5mac network. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And you write on your personal blog as well at
BZAMayo.com.
All right. We will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.